Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us today. When you get a chance, do me a solid, do me a favor, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy list. Oh, topical. That's what we're talking about today. We're really late getting to this year. And you can also stream back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, in studio with me is Brendan Appel of the Sons of Speed. Hey, Brendan.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm good. Jill is out this week, but you're in.
Yes.
And you have the clerical duty this week of helping me get through the 2025 Best Buy list.
I can't wait. I love this list every year.
So no guests this week. We just have to plow through this list. Interesting thing. Consumer Guide been around since 1967. We published our first Best Buy list, I think, for 1970.
Oh.
I have a blog post about that.
Was the CUDA on it?
The Barracuda was not, but the Plymouth Roadrunner was.
Oh.
Which is weird because I'm just going through a very old newsprint publication, and I'm trying to figure out why the Roadrunner is on that list. It's really weird because they have it in the intermediates category.
See that car today, and it's like 20 feet long almost.
It's
huge, it's big, it's fast, and handles like a pig.
Yeah, but the Dodge Dart and the Chevy Nova on that list. But we'll get, if we have time later, we'll get to that list.
That'd be fun.
What's going on at the Sons of Speed? Remind people.
So we are part of We Are Motor Driven, which is a conglomerate of Sons of Speed, Auto Exotica, The Median, and Rides and Drives. There are four outlets, essentially four sets of people. And we concentrate on our end of things. And the reason we have this nice conglomerate is so that we all kind of have our little niche. And ours is finding the soul and spirit of a car as you're driving it and just really what stirs up those emotions inside while you're behind the wheel.
And then you guys have some big news.
We do actually have some big news. Thank you. So, Tom, you know, unfortunately, Jill has been in studio way too often for my liking.
What gives? It used to be like every other week for a while.
I know. So she's been here on Mondays. And so we have, in order to scratch that podcast itch, we are creating our own We Are Motor Driven podcast. You have inspired us, and we are going to launch that next month. It's about an hour-long episode. And there's going to have four of us, plus sometimes a guest, and we just kind of go through a topic, like manual transmissions or our first car, road trips, things like that. So it's just a fun conversation between car guys and gals, and so it's just going to be a lot of fun, and we'll tell you more about it when we launch it, but it's going to be launching within about 3 weeks.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. All right, we'll talk more about the Sons of Speed after the episode. That is our encouragement to get through this quickly.
Yes.
So I just checked. Depending who you ask, there are between 267 and 285 different car models.
Interesting.
Available in the U.S., which is crazy.
Is that like if you count Crown Signa as one or
that
Crown?
Depends on the list. And that's where and things get really confusing if you go to Mercedes-Benz or BMW.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they throw an AMG or M performance. And are those models? They treat them like models.
I think it would be easier to solve astrophysics questions than sometimes figure out whether those are separate models or not.
So we picked 37 vehicles in 16 categories. We didn't do a couple categories this year, and I'll mention those when we get to them. But 37 vehicles that we think stand out at Consumer Guide that people should look at first. These aren't your only choices, but they should be on the top of your test drive list. Be sure to check out other stuff, too. And be sure to test drive. I'm freaked out by how many people don't test drive anymore.
I know. It's crazy.
And that's kind of the Tesla thing, too. And a lot of people got into Teslas not because they wanted to buy a Tesla, but because they wanted to buy an electric vehicle. They kind of believed in the brand. It was green. There were no other choices. So they didn't test drive them.
Right.
And Teslas are a little weird inside.
It's a different experience.
You should know this first.
Yeah,
exactly. You should test drive those vehicles.
Yeah, don't buy a car without test driving it, or at least having driven one a friend has or something like that.
And that is the least political conversation I've had about Tesla this year.
Exactly.
All right. We did this in 16 classes. I'm just going to roll through these. All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Subcompact crossover. This category is alive stuff and alive with value. It's a very interesting category. This is your entry level brand now because people don't buy small cars.
Right. They buy small SUVs and crossovers.
And there is great stuff in this class. This is by far our biggest class in terms of vehicles. I'll just read them real quick. The Hyundai Kona, the Subaru Crosstrek, the Kia Soul, the Chevrolet Trax, the Nissan Kicks, and the Buick Envista.
Yeah, this is an amazing list. We have driven the Soul and the Kona. We were at the Kona launch.
Okay.
Amazing value, and really a well put together vehicle. And that Envista looks amazing. And so does the Trax, actually. They're very handsome vehicles.
Trax and Envista are basically the same vehicle, but the one's been Buicked.
Yes.
So it's quieter. It's got nicer stuff, and it costs a little bit more. But both of those vehicles are shockingly good values and surprisingly roomy, fun to drive. And the interiors are pretty good for what they are.
Yeah.
I mean, the Buick is really good. And the Chevy is better than you would expect for 20, what is it? Starts at 21 grand, which is insane.
Wow.
Also, one of the important things, too, really tall people fit in these vehicles pretty easily.
Yeah, it's like a one-size-fits-all. If all you can afford is in this group, and even if this you can afford more, start looking at stuff like this if you don't need more, because why spend all your money on something that you don't need?
No, an interesting thing, too, about the Trax and the Envista is there are upgrade vehicles available right in the lineup that are roughly the same size.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go from the Trax to the Trailblazer,
mm-hmm.
which gets you all-wheel drive and a slightly bigger engine, and the Envista, which is basically the same move. You go from the Envista to the Encore GX.
Nice.
And that's a slightly nicer vehicle with a little more power. Now, both of those vehicles, three-cylinder. And if you're you or me, you might balk at that,
mm-hmm.
but young buyers don't know. They don't have the expectations of powertrain behavior.
And they don't remember the Geo Metro.
No. Well, that's the thing. These cars are actually reasonably quick for what they are.
Right.
But they do, the stop-start system can be weird if it catches it kind of like off cycle.
Yeah.
And there's some vibration at low speed that you would not get from a four-cylinder engine.
You know who really advanced the three-cylinder cause was Toyota when they did the Corolla GR, which is a 300 horsepower three-cylinder. And it's just like, okay, maybe three cylinders really aren't that bad.
I just drove that thing. That is some crazy noise.
I love that car.
Yeah, we need to talk about that a little bit more at some point, because 300 horsepower from a 1.6 liter three-cylinder,
mm-hmm.
and the noise is unearthly.
It's beautiful. And we almost bought a Crosstrek once. They're great vehicles, too.
My wife drives one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we own one.
Right.
Yeah, the Crosstrek is kind of the standout vehicle here. It's just so substantial and so good off-road. It's
all-wheel drive.
Yeah, it does cost more than the other vehicles on this list, but you're getting something for that money.
And the safety on it is pretty great.
Yeah. So, all right, that was premium crossover, subcompact crossovers. I'm sorry, we're moving to premium subcompact crossover. We just have one pick.
Yes.
And part of the thing is that Consumer Guide were kind of driven by price,
mm-hmm.
and other small crossovers, especially German ones, get really expensive in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got the BMW X1 here, which starts right around 42 grand. Delightful little crossover.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly roomy. It's spunky. It's fun to drive. And it starts at 42K. And I think that's key. A lot of money for a small crossover, not a lot of money for a BMW.
Right. Fun fact, my first 2001 330i that I bought was my own first and only BMW, was exactly 42 grand.
Was it?
But back then, that was a long time ago. Yeah. Very cool looking vehicle. And if you want that German engineering and that feel.
It feels German.
It
smells German.
Yes, it does.
We may have talked about this before, about how brands have certain smells.
Oh, yeah.
And this smells like a BMW.
It does.
This is based on front drive architecture. It is based on basically the Mini Countryman.
Interesting.
Also built by BMW. And look at that vehicle, too. Surprisingly, the Countryman is not that much less expensive.
Yeah, Minis have gotten a little big for their britches in the price department.
Yeah, and they got a little big, too.
And they had big in their britches, generally speaking.
They're in a very strange category, because they went from, when they launched, there was a $16,000 base Mini.
I know.
And it was a delight to drive. No power, but just so much fun to drive.
And they garnered so much fan following because of that.
Yep.
And it was fun to autocross. It was sporty, even though the regular one wasn't that quick. But man, Minis have gotten less than Mini. And if you put it next to an original Mini from the 60s.
Oh, they look huge.
Yeah. That thing, you know, the original Mini looks like it's a remote control car compared to the.
What is that movie? The Italian Job?
Italian Job. Yeah. You can watch Mr. Bean episodes if you like silent, funny comedy.
The Italian Job is the most loving tribute to the original Mini ever.
That's great.
What a great movie.
Great movie.
All right. Compact crossovers. There's so many good vehicles in this class, hard to make a decision. We went a little bit off the board with the Nissan Rogue. And if you've been paying attention,
perennial.
They're cutting deals on that bad boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so watch for that. But the Rogue is roomy, it's refined, it's quiet. And we just talked about mm-hmm. three cylinders. That is powered by a three-cylinder turbocharged engine. Surprising fuel economy.
And no longer a CVT?
Still a CVT. Oh,
okay.
But
a better one?
A better CVT.
I have lemoned a CVT, just so you know. And it was a Nissan product. It was an Infiniti product.
There was actually some news about that recently.
Interesting.
That one of the lawsuits has been settled, one of the class actions.
Well, they were nice enough to take my car back.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah, they had some trouble with CVTs, but they work very well in some applications, and this is one of them. We also have the Nissan Ariya. We don't single out electric vehicles,
right.
So that's in this class.
Which is the cousin to the Rogue, essentially.
It is, and while they're not that closely related mechanically, the template is the same.
Right.
About the same size, about the same room. Really nice interior. Surprisingly nice interior for the money. That vehicle's got some pretty good range. 205 miles on the small battery, up to 289 miles on the big battery.
That's good.
Available with all-wheel drive. Nice vehicle. Maybe cutting deals. So
Nissan should be cutting a lot of deals. So yeah, if you're shopping for Nissan, make sure you're getting a good deal, because and really any car right now, there's a lot of deals to be had out there. But I think especially with Nissan, especially since Honda, that didn't really go very well. And
that was a weird thing.
It was very weird, and I don't think it might have put them in an awkward position. But these are really good vehicles that don't get the recognition that they probably deserve, and so they're not, means that they're not getting the sales that they would otherwise expect.
No, and the Ariya was launched and then not launched. It's like they brought it
like
out.
Like they unlaunched it.
they basically, this happened with a lot of electric vehicles where people right. hit their original, manufacturers hit their original schedules, and they're like, oh, there's no buyers out here.
Mm-hmm.
And they started dragging their feet on those.
Like GMC pickup trucks?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Silverado and the Sierra right now are being built at a small factory. They haven't launched the big factory yet.
Right.
And they just added a new affordable version of the GMC.
Right.
By affordable, I mean like $65,000.
Probably talking about that last week or the uh-huh. week before, I remember listening.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. And then finally, the Kia Sportage, which is a delightful compact crossover.
Yeah, good looking one, too.
Recently drove the hybrid version of that. We got 38 miles per gallon.
That is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and plenty quick.
Because we will talk about later one of the other vehicles on your list that I just bought. It does not get 38 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, that's some good mileage. Now, also in this class, and we can't ignore them, we didn't make them best buys this year, but the Honda CR-V and the Toyota RAV4,
right.
perennial bestsellers for a reason. They're very good vehicles. You do want to test drive those as well. Also, Toyota and Honda do a really good job of nailing trim levels to where people want to be.
Yeah, I love the adventure trim level in the RAV4. It's really cool.
Yeah, Toyota just does good stuff with trim levels. And sometimes there's way too many trim levels to pick from. But you know what? A salesman's going to move you to the cars that they have.
So. Yep. Let me tell you all about this one.
Yeah, exactly. And you wanted Puce, right?
Right, right. Who doesn't?
All right. Premium compact crossover. We just have the one vehicle here, and it's largely based on fun to drive and sportiness and price, and that's the Acura RDX.
There's one right now in your parking lot.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, nice
but,
blue one.
But this has been a perennial Best Buy, and it's just because it's fun, it's reliable. And by reliable, I don't mean just like it always starts. I mean, it's reliably good.
Yeah, there's
every
really...
Trim level, or every generation of this vehicle has been fun.
Acura does all their SUVs very well. So it's almost like they're almost boring to a fault because they're always so good.
That is a hilariously accurate thing to say, because you don't think about these vehicles, and then you get into one, and you're like, oh yeah, Acura's really good,
right?
And it's a shame. It's a shame because Acura is not getting the buzz right now that it deserves. And part of the thing is that we've got other brands moving in, like Genesis,
mm-hmm.
is sucking a lot of the air out of the room because that product is so good.
Yes,
I mean
it really has sucked a lot of the wind out of the sails of Acura, especially because it plays in that same ballpark. But I have owned MDXs. I have a friend. It's all he buys is RDXs, MDXs. He loves them. He's, you know, and there's never anything wrong with them. They're always comfortable. They smell good.
Yeah.
and they work well. It was my wife's favorite vehicle in the snow was our MDX.
And they're probably the best handling premium
crossovers. 100%. That super SH, what they call super handling all-wheel drive, is a real thing.
Yeah. All right, mid-size crossovers. Now, we've got a bunch of stuff here, and there's so much good stuff in this class, it's tough to choose from. But the Hyundai Santa Fe was redesigned last year, mm-hmm. and if you've seen one on the road, you know it.
Yeah, you're not going to mistake that for anything else on the road.
But lots of power, great interior use of space. There is a third row, which is interesting,
mm-hmm.
But very likable car. One of the interesting things about it, though, and I've been saying this about Honda and Kia for a while, they're no longer bargains, but they are good deals.
Yes.
The price of this thing went up a lot.
And that's a reflection of how much stuff they're stuffing into anything over at the Hyundai Group. And that's why they were such great bargains, is you could get something for, like, say, $40,000 that had the equipment of a $50,000 vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's slowly it's been equalizing, I would say, that they're no longer sort of that extraordinarily good deal. Now they're just sort of a good value.
Yeah. But on the other hand, the quality of the product and mm-hmm. is very compelling, so they're still right in there. Yeah. We put the Subaru Outback here.
Okay.
And there's a lot of asterisks and backstory to this, but it's technically a station wagon. It's really a wagon version of the old Legacy sedan.
Yes.
But that's it. It's a fantastic vehicle. Lots of off-road capability, slightly elevated. Looks like a crossover, which is a huge selling point for people.
Yes.
It's part of the reason my wife and I bought a Crosstrek. I should be immune to this, but I'm not.
Yeah, I'm so surprised that you haven't put yet a kayak on the roof and gone camping.
I need to do that.
Yeah, because that's what you would do when you buy an Outback or a Crosstrek. These things are great for active people, adventure people, or people who want to pretend that they are active and go on adventures.
I was surprised, I think it was for last year, when they added the wilderness version of this.
I know.
Because I thought the Outback already was a wilderness version.
It's like the sporty Corvette, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Come out with a GT version. And yeah, they do that.
They do do that.
So I guess it makes some sense to make it even better
yeah.
than it was.
And there's a 1,000-horsepower version of the Corvette now.
Yes,
so.
There is.
All right. So also on the list, the Toyota Highlander and Toyota Grand Highlander. Now, interesting thing about both these vehicles, they're frankly not a lot of fun to drive.
A little boxy.
But they are supremely refined. The highway ride quality and quietness are the perfect family vehicles. They're great on long trips. Unbelievable ride quality, decent power. Now, a very sad thing, and we can mourn if we want to, the old 3.5-liter V6 is gone.
Yes, we will mourn that.
It's replaced by a turbocharged 2.4-liter engine, which is...
not as silky smooth.
No, it's not silky smooth at all. But it is very powerful and is relatively fuel efficient.
Yeah.
It is progress, but it's sad progress.
And it's, Toyota's got to be a little careful, because if they make that too refined, it's going to start making Lexus look unnecessary. Or at least some versions.
This is a conversation I would love to have someday, because mm-hmm. I have this belief, and maybe not Lexus so much, but I think the German brands are starting to feel this, that mainstream vehicles are getting very luxurious.
Yes, they are.
And we were talking about the Palisade before, the Hyundai Palisade mm-hmm. before we went on air. But for under 60 grand, you can get a vehicle that definitely rivals premium crossovers.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of comfort and refinement. And they look cool.
I used to have a Lincoln MKX, which is now the Nautilus.
Uh-huh.
And between that and the Palisade I just drove, and that, granted, the Lincoln was older, but same level of refinement, more stuff on the Palisade because it was newer. But you really, it's at that level that Lincoln was at 5-6 years ago. So you're right. They just keep creeping up. And that's...
yeah.
The easier thing to do is the interior stuff. That's the funny thing is, the ride handling and quality and all that stuff that's more difficult for a manufacturer to do. They can make the inside look nicer, which kind of brings us to your next couple of cars.
Yeah, and this Mazda has made public its intentions to go upscale,
right,
to become premium, and this was the best example of that. So the Mazda CX-70 and the Mazda CX-90, vehicles that should not have different names but do, midsize crossovers, and they still start relatively affordable. I forgot, I got the number here someplace, but right over 40 grand, which is about where you need to be in this class, but they get expensive in a hurry.
Yeah.
Especially in plug-in hybrid form. But there is a new 3-liter inline six, that's their premium engine, it's turbocharged, it's available in two power outputs.
Not a four, a six.
A six, yeah, and it's quite powerful.
Yeah.
And it's very smooth, and it's very silky. The interiors are really nice.
Yes.
And they still handle like Mazdas, which is nice.
I always think of Mazdas, especially these, it's like a fine glass of wine. I don't know why. That's just the feeling you get when you get inside one. It just has that level of now new refinement that
There is something
for some
very
reason
modern.
That translates into
yeah,
that
there
for
is
me.
Some modern think to it, and,
yeah.
And they went out of their way. Now, to make for so people know, CX-70 is a 2-row crossover. The CX-90 is a 3-row crossover. That's really the big difference.
Are they about the same size too?
They're
I mean,
almost
overall.
Exact same yeah. dimensions. Yeah. The weird thing is that the trim levels are named completely differently.
Just to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Also, I have a beef with these vehicles. The plug-in hybrid variants aren't as smooth as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being hybrids, they're not great hybrids. So you want to test drive that and make sure you want to do that. And my whole thing about plug-in hybrids as well is that if you're not going to plug it in, don't
do it.
Because you're paying for a lot of battery.
Right.
And you're picking up a lot of weight. That's just hurting you.
Yeah. And if you want to carry extra weight, I can give you some of my stuff to store in your trunk.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about premium midsize crossovers.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm going to say that again.
Yeah, one more time. You got it this time.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. He is Brendan Appel. We are not related as far as we know.
As far as we know. Although, you know, we get along so well, we could be.
I went to lunch with some people that I don't know so well. But one of the guys there, not in Appel, but was from one of the towns in Serbia that my folks were from.
Interesting.
Small world. And it turned out our waitress overheard the conversation, and she was from there as well. And I'm like, what the? How is that even possible?
Wow. Small world.
Three people from somewhere south of Belgrade.
Hmm.
Crazy.
It is a small world out there.
Yes. Okay, we're going through the 2025 Consumer Guide Best Buy list, a big list. We are now up to the premium midsize crossovers. This is a great category because everything in this category is pretty darn good.
It is nice. These vehicles.
But we were just talking about the Lincoln Nautilus.
Yes.
So 2 years ago, that vehicle was redesigned.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of an also-ran vehicle for a little while, I think.
Yes. They stuck with the previous design that I owned for a long time.
Yeah. And then they moved to this vehicle. This vehicle's built in China.
Right.
Which may mean it may not be available for...
Well, or not at the same price that it
yeah,
used to be.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with this. Right now, it's competitively priced, though it is a little bit more expensive to make up for that China thing. Interesting thing about Lincoln in China, and this is true of Cadillac, too, they're more premium there than they are here.
Right.
Like, they're almost up like a whole trim level.
And it's the opposite of what Mercedes did in the 80s and 90s in bringing stuff here. You know, Mercedes used to be taxi cabs in Europe, and then they came here, and they were the premium model. They wouldn't bring over stuff that... and interfered with that image. And it's kind of the backwards, you know, when you go to China, that is more premium. So it's interesting how every market looks at similar or same vehicles and they treat them differently, or I find it fascinating.
In 1972, when my family moved from Chicago to Palatine, we were adjacent to Rolling Meadows. Rolling Meadows had Mercedes-Benz garbage trucks. And we didn't know what to make of that.
Right, right. It's because over there, it's like Chevrolet. It's like everything. They build everything. The real quick fun story about the Nautilus.
Uh-huh.
Because now that it is built in China, I'm in a Nautilus like Facebook group. And one of the rules is you cannot say anything about it being built in China or else they will literally slap you down and maybe ban you. And I don't know why they're so sensitive to that fact.
I don't know. I don't know what the stigma is.
And I know.
Two things. One, the Chinese now build great vehicles independent of American brands.
Mm-hmm.
BYD, for example, or NIO. These are brands over there that are very well regarded.
Right.
But additionally, someone once told me, like a Volvo built in China isn't a Chinese Volvo. It's a Volvo built in China by Volvo.
Right.
What are you worried about?
Exactly.
And it turned out funny. Cadillac used to bring in the CTS. I think it was the CTS plug-in hybrid from China. And it turned out to be like their best quality vehicle.
Right.
And that's true now of the.
It's not a good look for the UAW.
The Buick Envision,
right?
I think is their highest quality vehicle, and that's built in China. So there aren't a lot of vehicles imported from China. I wouldn't worry about it.
Right. I don't know why the oversensitivity to it, but it was just an interesting aside. I like your other vehicles on here, though, too.
Yeah. So Nautilus, yeah, I just want to talk real quick. Mm-hmm. That view screen, the.
Oh, that's the most unique thing about the car.
The monitor, A-pillar to A-pillar. Yeah. It's so easy to configure, and you can just put stuff out there. So in front of you, you still have your instrument panel, and then next to that, you still have some basic car information, but then you can put a clock, you can put weather, you can put navigation, or the music you're listening to. It's so cool, and you can line them up where you want them. I always put the clock all the way to the side,
right,
so I can just see it real quick. It's fantastic.
The point is if you are in this premium midsize crossover category, you're shopping for things in this category, and you don't go look at the Lincoln Nautilus, you're doing yourself a disservice, because it is unlike anything else on the market right now, with the possible exception of the forthcoming Escalade IQ. But that's going to be a $150,000 vehicle. Yeah. So go look at this thing. Even if you don't buy it, you got to go look at it, drive it. It's so unique that it's just worth the visit.
You make a great point. You should see it just to get some ideas for bench points. Yeah. So some benchmarks.
Like, absolutely.
What's cool about this car?
Because this is not like, you know, a lot of the vehicles we've already talked about, they're almost, you know, they're very similarly laid out. And it's trying to explain, like, let's say a Tesla that only has a center screen and no gauges in front of you. Like, go see it because it's unique. It's different. It's not like anything else that's out there. The Lincoln Nautilus is that vehicle.
Yeah. It's also available in hybrid or non-hybrid form. There's no reason not to get the hybrid.
Yeah.
Just get the better fuel economy for a couple of grand extra. Also on the list, the Cadillac Lyriq. This was Cadillac's first full electric vehicle. It's really good.
I see a lot of these in Chicagoland.
You know what's fun about them is that they look unique, but they don't look strange.
Right.
It's a good look.
It is a good look.
And if that's important to you, and it should be in your luxury class, if you're buying this kind of money on a car, maybe you want something with some interesting design. This is the way to go. I drove one for, I think, almost 2 weeks. Loved it. The only thing about it is that it does not ride quite as, what's the word I'm looking for, cushy as you might expect a Cadillac to.
Right.
It's definitely more BMW kind of Mercedes ride quality. Let's say BMW. It's pretty firm.
On the damper side.
Yeah, so definitely check it out and make sure you want to do that.
Right.
Also, Cadillac now has they're almost all EV already.
It's insane how fast that they went away from their gas stuff.
Yeah, they killed the XT4, so they no longer have a gasoline-powered compact crossover. And then they brought in the Vistiq, the Optiq, I think the Celestiq, which is the ultra-premium car, is coming out.
And then they're killing the sedans now.
They're killing the sedans. And then the two Escalade IQ versions, long and short, coming out soon.
Those are insane, by the way. If you have the coin to go... I mean, if you like driving a television studio, go get it. Cadillac IQ.
They do ride so well.
Oh, they're so sweet.
Also, we were just talking off here about the AKS audio system.
Mm-hmm.
Hokey schmokels.
Mm-hmm.
That's good audio.
Yep.
And then we can go decidedly more mainstream in this category, the Infiniti QX60, which was redesigned 2 years ago.
Right.
Just a nice car.
Yeah.
It's fundamentally a luxury crossover, and it does everything well.
I think they got rid of the CVT.
They got rid of the CVT.
Okay, good. Because this is the vehicle I lemoned.
Oh, okay.
With the CVT. And we liked it. It was a very good vehicle, but for that transmission. But this is now, we're talking 11 years ago. This is now a very nice vehicle.
Yeah, beautiful interior. Nice ride and handling. Very conventional in a good way. Like if you're put off by, I hate to use the term bells and whistles, but if you're put off by them, this might be the vehicle to go with.
Right.
It also starts relatively affordably, under 52 grand.
Yeah, there was a time in my neighborhood that everybody bought one of these vehicles, including us.
The autograph version I drove came to just under 70, so it stays pretty affordable the whole ride. Also, they replaced the V6 with a 2-liter turbo.
Oh my gosh!
Because it has been so ordained.
I'm pouring one out right now. I know.
Oh man,
the 6 was a good engine.
It was, yeah. But that's the story there. So Lincoln Nautilus, Cadillac Lyriq, and Infiniti QX60 and the premium midsize crossover. Large SUVs, we usually do. There's been so much churn in that segment that we just didn't have access to everything.
Right.
And I haven't driven an Escalade in almost 2 years, so I need to drive the new Escalade. So there's stuff we haven't seen yet. I am driving, just to talk about it, I did drive the Nissan Armada right now, but I drove the Infiniti QX80.
Okay.
Which is fundamentally the same vehicle. It's really good.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that.
And good looking.
And I mentioned that because the old one sucked.
Yes, it did.
It was cramped and thirsty.
Oh, man, that was not a very good vehicle.
No, and they replaced the old school V8 with a 3.5-liter turbo. That gets the job done.
That's a better play right there.
Yeah, so we have no picks this year for our large SUV or premium large SUV. Now we get to an interesting category because it's shrinking.
Yes. Well, we get the incredibly shrinking small car.
Small car, yeah. We used to do subcompact car, but they're all gone.
They're all gone.
The Spark, the Sonic, the Fiesta, the Kia Rio, the Hyundai Accent.
How about the Aveo? Remember that thing? I got that one that says a loaner car for my Corvette. Like, how insulting is that? I mean, I had this clown car.
I liked when there was a little bit of time when manufacturers are trying to name 5-door hatchbacks as like premium.
Right.
Like there was a Hyundai Accent Touring or Hyundai Elantra Touring, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Touring was sort of like cool. But there was an Aveo 5. I don't know what year this was, 2003, 2004. And you know what I'm talking about now. Uh-huh. But I got that car to drive to the spring rally. So from Chicago
to
the middle.
That had to be the most miserable trip of your life.
It was actually humiliating. It was lime green. I'm in the right lane because I have to be.
You wore a paper bag on the way up.
Everything. And it wasn't exactly a terrible car, but it was kind of a terrible car.
Oh my gosh, it was bad. Right. Between that and the spark, oh man.
It was loud. The interior wasn't very nice, and even the ride quality, it didn't settle in on the highway.
It was too embarrassing to rent. The rental car companies wouldn't take these things.
But the Aveo 5.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah. I drove up there with someone who got a ride home with somebody else. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff, if you're listening, I'm still mad.
Jeff made the right call.
Yeah. But the cars in this class, so we're including subcompact and compact in the same category, and really the only subcompact is the Nissan Versa.
Right.
Which is just a spectacular value. Yeah, it's relatively fun to drive. It's got a lot of stuff, and it's very practical, and it starts at, I have the number here somewhere, about 22 grand.
Wow.
Just a good deal.
Although, as we talked about before, you spend the 22 grand, and you go look at the tracks.
Yes.
That's what's killing the small car.
It is what's killing the small car, especially because people, or the Kicks, Nissan Kicks only cost about $1,500 more to start.
Uh-huh.
Go there, and then you can get all-wheel drive if you want it.
Right.
So that's what's going on. Now, in this class, there's the indefatigable Civic.
Yes.
The Civic is so good. It's always been good. It's still good.
And the SI form at the manual. Oh, so much fun to drive.
Which is the last manual.
Yeah.
That and the Type R.
But that, man, if you can't afford a Type R and you want to get fun in a front wheel drive, fun car to drive, that Civic SI is great. And it's always another one on this list. I'll wait till you get to it.
Yeah. The SI 1.5 liter turbo. It's zingy.
It
gets a lot done.
And you can play it up in the upper rev range. It's a fun
little 200 feel. Horsepower. And if you like to work a stick,
mm-hmm.
that's your car. And if not, this is a pretty roomy car. A funny thing has happened to compact cars. They got midsize.
Right.
And so the Civic, the Corolla, the Elantra, these are bigger than you think they are.
Oh, yeah.
And they might get the job done for you. So we talked about the Civic. We talked about the Versa. The Corolla line has simplified a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by simplified, I mean there's not a lot going on there in terms of drivetrain.
Right.
There's just a base drivetrain and a hybrid drivetrain. And the hybrid.
And the GR drivetrain.
And the GR. Which is not really involved in this Best Buy. I don't know if we can fully endorse that.
I don't think you can throw 40 grand into a small car, call it a Best Buy. But it is the best fun.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So and the funny thing is that of the three of the vehicles on this list, they all have very sporty versions, the Type R, the GR, and then we'll talk about the next one. But you can. This is like kind of like a starter list for your sporty vehicle. I know you don't have that as a category, but that's what I. Sounds of Speed will throw that in.
No,
and
we,
make
do
it
have,
up
the, we do have. We do have sporty performance. Yep.
All right.
With some very, but if you sort want, of obvious choices.
What about the small car performance?
Yeah.
This is a great starter list. Just go up the ladder.
So Corolla sedan and hatchback, no stick anymore.
No,
sadly. But there is a hybrid, and then the Elantra, which is just a very nice small car.
We love the Elantra.
But you're talking about, of course,
the N version.
Yeah.
But man, it's just a nice vehicle. Balanced, handles really well. It is really a nice vehicle, even in non-N form. But boy, the N is just such a beautiful car.
Now in this class, Kia just introduced the K4 with some interesting, almost controversial styling.
Mm-hmm.
The C-pillar is weird. People want to check that out.
Yeah.
But it's a nice little car.
I do like that one.
And then the Nissan Sentra got better last year. They improved the interior. It's a nice car. It's worth looking at. And then still in this class.
There's no more Altima, right? Or they're still
an
Altima.
They're still an Altima.
Oh, Nissan's still, they're trying to keep the car alive.
They are.
God bless them.
I don't know how much that's helping them because I think they have to discount them to sell them in those categories.
Yeah.
But the Prius is still out there too. The Prius.
Prime and the, what else is the plug? Is there a plug-in or is it all just the Prime?
The Prime is the plug-in.
The Prime is the plug-in.
Yep.
That's right.
In other words, there's a standard Prius. Rear seat headroom no longer a thing.
No, it's a little slopey.
It's a little slopey.
We compared that to the Lamborghini Countach as far as like the front end is very slopey. Like, uh-huh. that. Like there's no angle difference between the hood and the windshield.
Right.
It's all like one piece. It looks cool. I actually didn't mind driving it, but man, it was not fast, but got great mileage.
Not fast, fantastic mileage, really nicely screwed together like every Toyota, but rear seat headroom is a thing. Do you remember the Prius V?
But barely.
There was the Prius V, the Prius C, and then the standard Prius.
Yes,
Prius
I remember V, the C.
The V was the high roof wagon, and it seemed like every cab driver on the planet wanted one.
Exactly.
So there was like used ones didn't last anywhere because cabbies wanted them, but those had huge rear seat room. The interiors of those kind of sucked. They were like really hard plasticky.
Perfect for a cab.
Yeah, but the dollar value was there, and the fuel economy was there, and the reliability was there.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of a cool family car if you were boring or just really driven by value. Well, the world still needs that car, I think.
Exactly. There are those buyers out there.
All right. Premium small car, we have the Genesis G70.
Also one in your lot today.
Yeah. It's for people that don't know, it's a really nice alternative to the BMW 3 Series.
Yeah, very nice car.
And the thing about the BMW 3 Series, I think you can't touch one anymore for under 50. They've gotten
so expensive.
And then adding anything to them.
Yeah.
You can make your 3 Series a $70,000 car in a hurry.
They're trying to be Porsche, apparently, with their options program.
And then the Acura Integra. So the Genesis G70 rear drive, kind of more traditional, luxurious, premium car architecture.
Squarely at that 3 Series.
And then the Acura Integra, basically based on the Civic.
Yes.
No one ever pretends it's not. But it's a very nice Civic, basically.
It is very nice. It's a very nice Civic. They also have the Type R version or Type S. I forget what they call it. I think it's a Type R.
Yeah.
It used to be an Integra
Type
R. It's Type S now.
Yeah, I wrote it down because I was not going to get that.
Yeah, that's okay. But yeah, very nice vehicle too. Also could be had in a stick shift in that variant, but nice vehicle.
Yeah, you can get stick with both the 1.5, which is the standard turbocharged engine, about 200 horsepower, or what is that? The R is, I think, 310 or 320.
Yeah, it's more than the Type R. Because you pay more. So they want to give you a little more horsepower. And Acura makes some fantastic stick shifts.
Yes, they do. Yeah, and I think that the Type R or Type S, I'm sorry, stick only.
Nice.
So you got to do
that. It makes me happy.
All right, midsize cars. We were just talking about those. I think one of the best cars you can buy in America is the Honda Accord.
It's insane that this is a midsize category because all of these cars are huge compared to what we used to call midsize.
They are, and there is no longer a large car category.
Yeah, because these all grew to the large car size. You get in the back seat of one of these vehicles, and you have plenty of legroom, even if you're 6 feet tall.
Yeah, and the only large cars we had were the Avalon, the Toyota Avalon, that's gone. The Chrysler 300 and the Dodge Charger. Thank you. Yeah. And those are gone.
Yeah.
So this is what's left. Now you've got the Honda Accord, which is very roomy. The Toyota Crown.
Great car.
Not getting the love it deserves.
No, it's the seats in that thing are so comfortable. And I see one every once in a while, and I'm always like, that person actually drove this car on a test drive and fell in love with it.
I think the Crown secretly addresses something that no manufacturer wants to admit they're addressing. And that's that we're all getting older.
Knee pain?
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly it. Because it has an elevated ride height. Though they don't claim
the
it's
step
like
step in is so nice.
Yeah. And if you're like me with a bum knee, and I'm not small, I love the Crown. And then when you're in it, it's really nice.
This was the replacement for the Versa, which was filled that category very well. And they don't really sell it anymore, I don't think. Did they just end the Versa?
Or Venza?
Venza, sorry.
Yeah, Venza's gone.
Not the Nissan.
Yeah, Venza was kind of a luxury CRV.
Yeah.
RAV4.
But the Crown had that same step in, sort of almost like a level step in or a little more level. Very, very nice car. It does not get the love it deserves. Go check it out. The interior is very nice and comfortable.
And the Crown, the last thing about the Crown, too, is it's now available with the Signia.
Yes.
Signia. Yes.
Sigma or Signia?
Signa. Sigma.
It starts with an S and ends in an A.
I think it's Signia.
Everyone.
But that is the wagon version of that vehicle, basically. They're not calling it a wagon. Very practical vehicle. Doesn't come with the hybrid turbocharged engine, unfortunately. I think they're expecting to do very small volume with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool looking.
Yeah.
And it's the version I would get. All right. Premium midsize car. One car. There's not a lot of cars in this category anymore. But the Lexus ES, which is
perennial.
Big time redesign next year.
Oh, yeah?
Big change is coming. This is the last car on this list you can get that V6 with that I miss.
Oh, that V6 is so good, people. If you don't know what he's talking about, it's such a smooth and great engine.
But the Lexus ES is the luxury car for people who don't want to think about their cars.
Exactly.
It's not that much fun to drive, but it is incredibly roomy and refined.
Yes.
It's quiet. It's really well screwed together. Really nice interior. Everything about this car is just, it's top notch. For a surprisingly accessible price, starts at $43,000. There's a hybrid version at the bottom. You can get all-wheel drive.
This was every 55 to 60-year-old driving this to the golf course.
Yes. Also, if you're a realtor, I don't even know what else you would get.
Right. It serves that role perfectly.
All right. Premium large car. The Genesis G90 is the most unsung, most unloved vehicle that deserves more love.
If you want a Bentley for $100,000, buy a Genesis G90.
Yes. And I keep saying exactly that, that the interior of that car would not shame a Bentley.
No. You can close the doors by putting your foot on the brake. It's stuff like that. It's amazing. I love that vehicle.
Yeah, and outstanding audio systems, beautiful interior, yeah. Really smooth driving experience, so about great. $100,000.
Yep.
Which seems like a lot, but go shop for a large luxury car now.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of large luxury cars that are kind of a deal, the Lexus LS, still available with a V8.
Oh, that's nice.
It's strangely cramped up front.
Yeah, it's weird when you get a big car and the proportions are not what you expect inside.
It's kind of a world market car, mm-hmm. and they didn't really engineer that front seating area for Americans.
Does that mean the B pillar's right in your side? Yeah.
Yeah, and you're talking about something that is key to the European sedan experience. The door openings up front tend to be smaller, and part of that is for body rigidity.
Right.
They're building these very rigid, premium vehicles, and if you're taller and you turn to the left to look out of the car, you're looking right at the pillar.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Tom.
But that Lexus has a beautiful interior. The V8 is fabulous. There's a lot there to like. All right. Small pickups. My controversial pick here, Consumer Guide's controversial pick.
Yeah, it is.
The Frontier, which is perhaps arguably, based on trim levels and drivetrain options, the least entertaining vehicle on this thing. But it's also the simplest and most affordable.
How much is this vehicle?
It starts at $33,000.
I noticed the Maverick did not make your list.
No, we've had Maverick on the list before. It's up $8,000 since it was introduced.
Ouch. As a percentage of the original price, that's about a third or 27%?
It's 40%. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Part of what happened with the Maverick, which for people who don't know, that's Ford's very small crossover or pickup truck.
Pickup truck.
Very likable.
Yeah.
Very likable car, fun to drive, turbo hybrid. It came out right at the beginning of COVID. And once there was a car shortage, they decided, we're not going to build a $20,000 car when we can't sell every car we could make.
Yeah.
So they really dragged their feet on production. In the meantime, they started to come up with fun versions of the car, and they started meeting demand by raising prices.
Yes.
So, the Maverick got expensive. It's still a great car. It's just not the bargain it was.
Harvey from Rides and Drives has one.
Yeah.
And he loves it.
I just saw one today with the steel wheels. I love that look.
I did saw one yesterday with steel wheels.
Yeah. So we like the Frontier in this class largely because you still get a V6, a very conventional, very smooth V6. Every other vehicle in this class, some sort of turbocharged 4.
Yes, you're right.
And while they're strong, they're not especially refined.
Right.
All right. Large pickup trucks. What a surprise. The Ram 1500.
Yes. And this is the one of the... I can personally vouch for this vehicle. I did buy one at the end of last year. I have the limited version. Great truck. Just love this truck. And I come from a Corvette, so I went the... I still have that, but how could you get more opposite? I guess I could have gone from a Miata to this thing. It's huge, but it's big. It's big fun. It's really comfortable. It is so comfortable to drive and just very nice interior.
And the thing about it, too, the ride and handling are so good, largely because this is the vehicle in the class that does not have leaf springs.
Right.
Leaf springs, as on a Model T, it does not have leaf springs in the back. It has a coil suspension. And the suspension pays dividends in ride and handling.
And in the limited quietness. And higher, I think, I've got air ride suspension. And so it has auto leveling. It'll lower on the highway. Self-driving, massaging seats. It's a really nice vehicle.
All right. Sporty performance car. We've got two picks here. The Evergreen Ford Mustang. It keeps getting more expensive, but there's really nothing else like it.
Nope.
Camaro's gone.
Nothing else sounds like it either.
No. And then even the four-cylinder, they call it the EcoBoost trim level. It's a blast. It's something like 310 horsepower.
Yeah.
Plenty of power.
And it actually has better balance because there's less weight up front.
And then the Subaru WRX. Just drove one of those recently. Still available with stick.
Yep.
And what a fun car. all-wheel drive, really well-balanced, all sorts of power. It's a joy to drive.
And if you want to take it on a racetrack, you can get the, I think it's TR version or TI, one of those.
They just change it, from TR to TS.
TS, maybe. Yeah, try out. Okay. Yeah. And it just basically upgrades the brakes so you don't overheat them on track. Which we did do in an episode of The Lap, and then we brought the next one out, and I can vouch for the brakes are much better now.
All right, and finally, we got through this list. Finally, the minivans. The Chrysler Pacifica remains on the list. This is really a luxury vehicle now, and they've raised the price to the point where it really is a luxury vehicle. It starts at $44,000.
Well, that's what the Ram is it basically became a luxury truck, especially in the upper levels. So this is a bargain compared to the Ram pricing, especially at the upper level. But yeah, these things are really nice. If you have to drive a minivan or you need a minivan, you can't get much nicer than this.
No, but it does start at $44,000. It gets expensive in a big hurry.
And you can get a hybrid all-wheel drive version, right?
You can.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think you can get hybrid and all-wheel drive. You can get hybrid or all-wheel drive. Yeah. And the prices rise very quickly. We drove one recently that came to $62,000.
It's a lot for a minivan.
A lot of money for a minivan. But you do get supreme highway quality. Like, it's just quiet on the highway. Fantastic
ride.
It's
a great road trip car. Yeah. You can see your kids on the video screen if you want.
Even with the standard V6, your fuel economy is good on the highway.
Right.
So that's cool. But something snuck on the list this year, and that's the Kia Carnival, because first of all, it looks cool.
Yeah.
And I always call it the Bachelor Dad Party Pad because...
Oh, that's a great name.
it's just like...
Trademark Tom Appel Bachelor Dad Party Pad. I love it.
It's a minivan that looks cool.
Yeah.
And it does, and it's fun to drive, great audio system, and it starts at 42... I'm sorry, it starts at 38.
Right.
And the hybrid, which I just drove... I don't know how they get a 1.6 liter engine to do what it does in a hybrid drivetrain, but it moves that vehicle with authority.
Really?
And we got, I think it was 37 miles per gallon.
Wow.
So the system works, but the hybrid starts at $42,000.
Yeah. As you say, this is a list of places to start, and you should definitely hit anything that you're in that category shopping for.
All right. That was the Best Buy list. I will post that on the Facebook page. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some Sons of Speed.
That'd be great.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of the Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to the Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, special 2025 Best Buy edition. Sitting in is Brendan Appel for Jill Simonillo. Brendan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to talk some Sons of Speed now. You guys have a podcast coming up.
Yes.
You guys just recently posted a video about the Ford Off-Rodeo?
Yes. And that we talked about, I think you and maybe Paul may have talked about our experience. We went down to Knoxville, Tennessee. Ford brought us out before the off. So we should probably talk about what the Off-Rodeo is.
Yeah.
If you buy a Bronco, then Ford will offer you an opportunity to go out. It's at minimal cost to any one of, I think it's four or five, maybe up to six, I don't know. There's somewhere in that four to six range locations throughout the United States to learn how to drive that thing off-road. And you don't bring your vehicle, you use theirs. So something breaks, it's not your problem. But it's all these different types of vehicles. So we had a two-door Badlands, which is, I think, one of the best off-road vehicles that we've driven, and we've driven a lot of them. And throughout the experience, you're in a group of about four to five vehicles. You have a lead driver. You are on radio, so you are getting instructions on what to do. And you go through this course. And in Knoxville, it's very mountainous. There's a lot of mud and ruts and mountains and fun stuff to do. And you're going up these great big hills. And at one point, you do try out the sport on basically like a pasture field at higher speeds.
Oh, fun.
It's a lot of fun. And they cover safety. They cover recovery. They cover... a lot of different things, and they've got guides on the trail. It's great opportunities for some cool pictures and videos. So we did a video of the experience. If you go to We Are Motor Driven on YouTube, you'll see that it's one of the first videos that you'll come across.
And we will link to that.
And it's just a lot of fun. It's a really and the funny thing about it is we had to spend a lot of time fixing the graphics on this video because I kept on correcting a spelling that is not misspelled because off rodeo is spelled R-O-A-D-E-O. And I said, that's not how you spell rodeo, but that's how Ford spells rodeo because they're going after the R-O-A-D part of the road.
Yes.
E-O. So that is, that is available right now. And the Knoxville location is new. So what if you buy a Bronco, what I recommend you do is go online, check out all the videos of people who have posted videos from all of these different locations and figure out where you want to go because there's Moab, Utah. I believe there's one in Texas and there's a couple other locations. So it's all wherever you might go and bring your vehicle off-road, and you should do that if you own one of these things, then you probably want to also train, go do the experience in that same environment. Are you going to a muddy, foresty area or are you going out to the desert? And there's different programs available for those.
And if you have a Bronco or if you have, say, a Wrangler or a very well-equipped Toyota Tacoma, for example,
right,
seek this stuff out. Like, you don't have to do the hard stuff. Like, you guys did some pretty extreme stuff, but there are off-road parks close to many people. And you can do like a level one course or level two course where you don't really need training. But you could, you know, if the top does come off, take the top off. It's a fun thing to do on a summer day. And you buy a vehicle that does this stuff, you're not going to hurt it.
Nope.
They're meant to do this stuff. And it could be a lot of fun. Why not enjoy what you paid for?
Exactly. And you get to, you learn how to use all of the gizmos on this thing. So like a Bronco has this thing called Trail Turn Assist, where it basically kind of breaks the inside rear wheel and lets you almost spin in place, which is really useful when you're trying to navigate around a tree.
I have not used that. And it's so simple.
That's the thing, is you get to use things like that out in the wild and learn what they're used for.
That is almost how a bulldozer turns.
Right. Yeah. Basically, it's kind of like a track, you know, like a tank track almost. But it's things like that, disconnecting the sway bars and locking the rear and the front and rear lockers, the differential lockers. So you get to play with all of this stuff and they kind of tell you as you're navigating this, turn on your lockers, disconnect your sway bar, do all these things. And the neat thing about a Bronco is you can disconnect the sway bar under load. So it drops the wheel down in the back to just sort of grab onto whatever it has some purchase. So they're all just so neat. You get a whole day out of it. You get breakfast, you get lunch and dinner, but it's a really cool location. It's a really cool experience and we highly recommend it. And if you can go topless on the vehicle, while you're out on the trail, we've done it before. It's the best way to enjoy a nice summer day. And also, all of these, like Jeep has the Jeep Jamborees, Bronco has the similar thing. There's enthusiast groups that you can sign up to do trips with, and they will essentially help you through because everybody wants to be very helpful for all of the people who are there. So you don't have to go alone. You can go in a group of people, meet new friends, have a great experience, go camping somewhere cool. It's just a way to get out, enjoy the planet, and enjoy the vehicle in its native environment.
Yeah, I worked with a guy years and years and years ago who had a Wrangler that he built. And I think it was the first car called Wrangler. Was that the TJ?
Yes.
But it was a much smaller vehicle. But he had one pretty well built for off-road use. And he was part of a club. And he would flatbed that vehicle places. And they'd just spend a day traversing things you can't traverse in a Malibu.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless it's a rental car.
Or Camry. Yeah. Right. If it's a rental car, go to town.
It goes anywhere.
Well, we are flat out of time, sir.
Oh, no quiz today.
Tell us again. No quiz today. I didn't think we'd have time.
All right. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun. So if you could find everything that we do at wearemotordriven.com or sonsofspeed.com, it'll get you to the same location. And yeah, we'll be telling you more about our podcast as it launches next month, but that's going to be a lot of fun. You inspired it, so I appreciate that very much.
Well, I'm glad. Looking forward to hearing it. And then shoot us a line. Let us know when it's up, and we will share that on the Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Talk about it on the podcast here. All right. Well, thank you, Brendan. Thank you for sitting in this week.
My pleasure.
Jill missed a lot of fun. I don't know what she's doing. Not nearly as much fun.
No.
And she missed a donut.
No way she's having as much fun as we are right now.
Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.